Podcasting from the beautiful Mile High City, you're listening to the Do It Again podcast, the official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. Here's your host, Jake Shannon.
The official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. I'm your host, Jake Shannon. Excited to have you guys all back here for another episode. Really trying to keep it interesting and the quality of the guests high. And today's show is no exception. I have with me on the line a guy who is a very good friend of mine, but a guy I respect immensely. Truly a champion in and out of the ring and off the mat and on the mat. Brandon Ruiz. Now, Brandon, I think it was Gerald Harris who actually introduced me to you. Brandon is a third-degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Machado black belt under Hegan. He is a, he's truly like a competitor's competitor. I think he's probably been wrestling probably close to 30 years now. Four-time All-American, Pan-American silver medalist in wrestling. Just an amazing guy. I could go on and on. Literally, it would probably take a half hour if I was to rattle off everything that this guy's accomplished in wrestling. You could go and learn about him, read about him. His website is RuizCombatGrappling.com. R-U-I-Z, combat, C-O-M-B-A-T, grappling, G-R-A-P-P-L-I-N-G. All that one word, RuizCombatGrappling.com. So without any further ado, let's bring him on there. Brandon, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jake. I'm excited for this.
Oh, yeah, man. I think it was Gerald. Back in the day, before I moved to Utah, I was kind of scoping it out, trying to figure out what I was going to do. And Kirik Jenis had invited me to run the first and only, I think it was short-lived, catch wrestling forum on his website. And it was there that I made a post that I was moving, and Gerald was all over it. He's like, oh, man, I got to get you and Brandon together. And I'm glad he did, because then we ended up having that gym for a couple years, and it became really good friends. We always talk philosophy and things of that nature, too. Brandon, for people who, you know, if they're a follower of Scientific Wrestling, they know who you are. But for people who don't know who you are, how would you like to be remembered for all the work and, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that you've spent in wrestling? How would you like to be remembered? Or what would be the elevator pitch, you know?
Oh, wow.
I know, it's a big one. Huh?
All of a sudden, I'm doing my own eulogy here. I think I'd like to be remembered as a guy that was willing to try new styles and that was successful in a number of different styles and able to really hopefully embody what it means to be a grappler in the truest sense of the word, not just a wrestler, not just a jiu-jitsu player or a judo guy, or just somebody that was willing to embrace everything that grappling had to offer and got the most out of it that he could. I think that's really been my goal. I don't know at what point that became the goal, but that's really been it for the last probably decade or so, just really trying to learn as much as possible about all wrestling styles and really come up with my own systems and approaches to how they all work together and just have as much fun as possible with them.
I think that's probably, from my estimation, I'd say that's pretty fair, too. I think you did a pretty good eulogy there. Hopefully, we will
use
that for another 50 years or something. But, you, I mean, because that is the truth. Like, literally, when Joel Bain and I, by the way, you and me and Joel are going to be here in Colorado for a seminar. So, and we'll talk about that more as the show goes on. I'll be sure to plug it. But it's April 13th and 14th, which is a Saturday and Sunday, in Arvada, which is where I'm living now in Colorado, at the Genesis Training Academy. You could just message me or contact at snakepitusahq.com. Just go to the Instagram. There's posters and whatnot. But anyway, I think that the the eulogy, as you call it, is apt, because when Joel and I were putting together that test show last summer, I was just like, oh, man, this is no longer like an open tournament. This is an invitational. We got to totally shift it up. And I started going through my Rolodex, and, of course, you were at the very top of the list. And I think I gave you literally like 3 weeks, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. And, I mean, it was like a crazy roster. You're like so wild. And the other thing that reminds me of, too, is like I remember now this is going back a bit. This has got to be – I don't know. When we have that gym, it's probably 2010.
It was about 10 years ago. It was starting like end of 08 and start of 09. So yeah, it's been about 10 years since that all came together.
Yeah. But to how crazy you are, I mean, in a good way, but like I show up and I have this shock knife and you're the first person, like most people, when I show them the shock knife, which is like, for those who don't know what a shock knife is, it's like a self-defense knife for weapons training, and it's a knife, but at the blade on the, you know, the blade and the knife, it's like a double-edged blade, is actually like a taser, like around the entire edge. So when you're doing your knife defense training or whatever, if you actually get hit, it shocks you, right? So.
Oh yeah, I loved that thing.
Yeah, you're.
That was probably my favorite training implement.
Dude, all I remember was like, the stupidest thing, I should never have given it to you, because all I ended up doing was just running around that damn warehouse like for my life.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah.
No,
so
wait. People don't know fear until you're being chased by Brandon Ruiz with a shock knife.
Gosh.
That was like, we had some fun.
Those were good times. It's funny because around the same time we were getting started, I was actually just starting getting going in the Filipino martial arts, getting started with Eskrima. And so all of that stuff was very new and intriguing to me. And so having that shock knife was really fun. And I actually used it with some of my wrestlers to help them get an angle and get out of the way of it. And yeah, nothing makes you move like that crackle of that shock knife starting up.
Yeah, I think it actually sounds worse.
You'll figure out what an angle means really fast. But yeah, those were some fun times, man. That was a while ago.
Yeah, it's crazy how time flies. So you're still in Utah, and you were at Jeremy Horn's gym, and I mean, this is one thing that. was really interesting, because when I moved from Southern California, I was a little, you know, concerned moving to Utah, because, you know, Southern California is such a hotbed for, you know, grappling and jiu-jitsu in particular. But when I moved there, man, Utah's got a really strong grappling community.
Like, yeah.
Really crazy competitive strong.
It's great here. So Utah is, or at least the Wasatch Front, which is like Salt Lake City, and then up north through Ogden and even down south to Provo. Just that whole, you know, 40-50 mile strip has a ton of good wrestling, like a lot of good folk style and freestyle and Greco-Roman wrestling. We have national champions coming out of Utah, all Americans coming out of Utah in the for folk style, freestyle, and Greco at the high school level. We're still working on that for collegiate level, but Utah's very consistent in their performances at nationals as wrestling. And then as far as grappling and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, people don't realize that Pedro Sauer was here for a long time back in the 90s, And he really established a good team out here and created a bunch of black belts. You've got John Carlquist, you've got Ricky Lundell. Those guys are probably two of the more accomplished competitors, but you've got a bunch of different guys like Eddie Edmonds. He has a school. Mark Brewer has a school down in like Linden, Provo area. But anyway, there's a number of Pedro Serra guys, but also Walt Bayless. Walt Bayless was one of the first coaches to Mark Schultz for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that's actually how I got into Jiu-Jitsu, was through Mark. When I was at BYU, I was there wrestling, and Mark was getting into Jiu-Jitsu. He had just fought Hickson Gracie in the BYU wrestling room, of all places.
Oh, and that happened at the BYU wrestling
room? It did.
That's
it happened
legendary.
In the BYU. Yeah, so it was like this. So Hickson and all the Gracies were, this was back when they were still into the challenge matches and all that. And for whatever reason, I guess it must have been that Pedro had heard about Mark, and because Pedro Sauer was a Hickson student. So anyway, so however that came out, Hickson decided he wanted to fight Mark. And I guess he called Mark up and he was like, "Hey, I want to fight you." And Mark just flipped out. Like, I could just imagine him just blowing steam out of his ears. And the way he tells it was pretty funny too. But he said, "Yeah, this guy called me up and wants to fight me." He's like, "You want to fight me?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'll fight you." And so he comes to the BYU wrestling room, and Mark takes him down real quick and puts him in a cradle, and it just had him cradled up for, you know, probably 20 minutes or more.
Yeah.
And he's just like, "Oh, gosh, this guy's no good," you know. And then just little by little, his grip starts to loosen, and then Hickson was able to get out and ended up choking Mark. And then at that point, Mark said, "This guy has more to learn. I need to learn from him because he beat me." Which it's kind of telling of Mark's attitude. You know, he's kind of very much a samurai type spirit that realizes, okay, there's knowledge that someone else has, I want it. And that was kind of cool to get that instilled into us to a degree. But that's really how, like, if without Hickson Gracie fighting Mark, I don't know that I would have been exposed to jiu-jitsu, or at least not at the point that I was during college. And so anyway, Mark wanted us to train jiu-jitsu. We do pin yourself Olympics, which I thought was kind of stupid for wrestling training. But this was like all, you know, preseason kind of stuff, just getting everybody kind of baseline and conditioned and everything. And, you know, I didn't want to do jiu-jitsu. I wanted to be a wrestler. I wanted to be all American and all that kind of stuff. But that was my first exposure to jiu-jitsu. And then after I finished my eligibility, I served a 2-year church mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and then got home and still had a year of school left, and didn't have, by that point, BYU, we'd lost our program, so there wasn't anything that I could go back and be involved with at the collegiate level. And so I said, "Well, I'll just get into jiu-jitsu." And so I started under a Walt Bayless guy named Mike Colby. And he's still probably one of the most technical and best jiu-jitsu instructors I've ever trained with. And I've trained with a lot of really good people, but, you know, this unknown guy from Utah, I still hold kind of in that high regard. He was just so good, so smooth.
Yeah, but how many guys
it's crazy.
Are out there like that, that nobody really knows about? And they're just these regional, like, kind of just tough technical guys that just don't want to make a big stink about it.
Right. Well, that's a difference between, I think, when I was starting jiu-jitsu in the early 2000s versus guys that are now. Like, we've kind of got into the Muhammad Ali-esque Conor McGregor era.
I know it.
Yeah,
It gets,
you know, and I'm from probably more of an old school mindset that's like, okay, you don't talk about yourself when you've done something that's worth talking about, somebody else will do it for you.
Yep.
And, you know, today's world, it's like everybody talks about themselves and trying to promote themselves and how good they are. And the reality of it is you don't know, but since they're, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, since they're so loud, you know, that's all people hear. And whether they're any good or not, it, you know, kind of remains to be seen sometimes. But yeah, like there's with jiu-jitsu anymore, like there's so many guys that, I don't know, it just drives me nuts. Like the other day I was looking at something on social media and saw something about the IBJJF was finally going to start giving out prize money for the black belt divisions. And I thought, oh, that's cool. You know, sport jiu-jitsu has been doing that for a few years now. So it's about time IBJJF finally catches up.
Yeah.
But I saw people like commenting on this post that oh, blue belts should get paid too. And I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? Like there, and I'm assuming it was some blue belt, but this guy was just going off like, yeah, I should get paid too. We should get paid, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, buddy, you've been doing this for maybe 2 years, maybe 2 years. and like, sure, you might be able to tap out a few guys or you might be one of these guys that comes in and is able to, you know, win a big tournament in a no-gi situation, but it's like, come on now, like you're going to tell me that a blue belt deserves to get paid before a black belt? Like, that's just ridiculous. It's like, I don't know, it just, anyway, today's world is just, I don't know if I can relate to it anymore. It's just gotten so crazy.
I mean, on every level, not just like sports, and I mean everything is so crazy these days. You know, you mentioned Pedro Sauer, because he was in Salt Lake, he was my first coach in grappling ever, because at 1994 at Boulder Karate, we'd have to fly him down from Salt Lake.
Okay.
And to be honest, that experience, we'd fly, Pedro in was probably the most regular because he was right there at Salt Lake. But then another cat named Ricardo Mergel, and then another guy, Kasika Munez, that we'd fly in. And you know, that's really where I kind of got the idea to do what I'm doing with the seminars for Catch. Because what I'm noticing now with in the last 10 years or whatever, is that there's just not enough Catch wrestling to go around. So you can't really have like a big established school. And so you got to go and travel and do seminars. It reminds me a lot of those times in like the mid 90s when there was no jiu-jitsu in the United States. It was like there was none. There was like a handful of guys and everything was done through flying them into your school, having them teach. And then you guys would, you know, do the best you could until the guy could come back and help sharpen the saw again. It's kind of interesting. I see Catch where jiu-jitsu was in the mid-90s. I see Catch kind of being there right now, like, you know, we're 20 years behind.
yeah Well, that's what people don't realize too, right, is that like jiu-jitsu, it's only been really, at least in America, popular within the last 20 years. And you know, the first UFC was, or at least I remember watching, was like 92 or 93.
Yeah,
and that's you know, like realistically speaking, that's not a huge time frame. So I think there's a lot of things being taken for granted that, you know, with how it's exploded. And Catch has been around for a long time, but it's, I mean, thanks to people like yourself and a few others, it's, you know, kind of coming through a resurrection, so to speak. But it's still going to take a minute, because you've got to first convince people of the superiority of grappling, and then you've got to convince them of the superiority of how Catch works against jiu-jitsu, and then there's other philosophical things that go along with that, like why is a takedown so important. This is what gets me, is jiu-jitsu is great for if you're disadvantaged in the sense that you're already behind in the match, or you're already behind in the fight. There's still more.
Yeah.
You're underneath. There's more things that can still happen, whether you get punched down or you get taken down. You're down and underneath. So yes, we want to figure out ways that we can continue to stay in the fight. But so many people lack the basic wrestling skills or wrestling abilities to be able to take their opponents down. And so I think it kind of hurts sport jiu-jitsu, and even starting, you're seeing it in MMA even more exposed, that the wrestlers are dominant just because they can control where the fight goes. If it's standing, they can say, okay, I'm tired of getting punched, I'm going to take you down. Or if they don't like the guy being on, you know, if they have a really tough jiu-jitsu guy, they're like, well, I'm not going to take you down yet. I'll punch you on the feet, and then I'll soften you up, and then I'll take you down and continue to beat on you. And so with the what the jiu-jitsu guys from the last, I don't know, 5 years or so have gotten so far from what jiu-jitsu originally was, that I think it's less effective in MMA because of that. And as long as there's a stronger pull towards sport jiu-jitsu, I think you're going to see fewer and fewer high-level jiu-jitsu guys cross over. You'll always see the wrestlers, because there just isn't any, there isn't the same kind of paid events for like a freestyle wrestler or a Greco-Roman wrestler, or at least right now, as you know, as of today's conversation. I mean, that could change. I know there's people that have tried to do that, like Real Pro Wrestling about 10 or 12 years ago tried to do that, but
I was at that taping too, and I was so excited, but I could just tell that, you know, they were just trying to do freestyle on TV, and it was like, man, you're gonna have to change the rules a little, I think, to draw an audience.
Yeah,
the spectators aren't gonna get all the weird stuff like back points and tilts, and they don't understand.
Yeah,
that.
And that's the unfortunate part about it, is that we have such a good base of folk style wrestling here in America, but we have so few people that understand where it came from and what the actual roots of it were. And I think if people were to better understand catch wrestling and understand like why was the, you know, why can you figure four the head but not the body, and why can you scissor the body but not the head, you know, I mean, just those rules in the folk style wrestling, it's because of catch wrestling. Because if you scissor the head, you can crank the neck. If you figure four the body, you can break the ribs. But most folk style wrestlers don't know that. Most high school kids are never going to find that out. Most high school coaches are, you know, mostly volunteer, and you know, you get kind of a mixed bag as far as what their exposure to wrestling is, what their level as an athlete was, what kind of, you know, so it's all over the place. But there's still a huge, huge base of folk style wrestling, and if there was some way to find a way to maybe add in chokes or maybe add in certain joint locks, I think you could really have a very powerful activity, sport, martial art, whatever you want to call it, just with what we already have here. Because, I mean, how fun would it be to see a couple of the college kids step off the mat from college and transition right into a professional catch type situation where, oh, look, we still get riding time, but oh, if you can get a choke, that ends the match just the same as a pin. You know, I think all of those things would be really fun, and the you know, this really, the sky is the limit with something like that. But right now we've kind of got, you have to pick one or the other. You can either be you can be a wrestler and wrestle Olympic styles and or collegiate style, or you can be a jiu-jitsu guy and play jiu-jitsu, or you can be an MMA guy and have to kind of learn everything. And but you know, there's really not the opportunity to just become from a wrestler and stay a wrestler. You have to kind of morph into something else. And you know, I've when I started wrestling, I really loved it. And when I saw those first UFCs, I wasn't interested in Hoist Gracie. I was interested in Ken Shamrock because he was a wrestler.
Yeah.
I could have done without his speedos, but I don't understand that. But Hoist Gracie beats Shamrock, and I was still like, oh, well, Shamrock was supposed to win that one. Like, what happened? He messed it up, you know. And a lot of other people were like, well, no, Gracie's the best. And I'm like, and then as you saw it progress, you really kind of saw those first UFCs where once the wrestlers understood how to, Yeah, it was just, it was too, it's too, fighting from the bottom is difficult. It's extremely difficult.
Well,
And
you mentioned some things strategically that I think are maybe worth talking about. That's like, you mentioned that, I think you said it a different way, but what registered in my mind is that, wrestlers are like the masters of the transition. Right? Like, I'm not within range. I've got to shoot to take you down. So you're transitioning into the clinch. Then from the clinch, you transition into the takedown, and then from the takedown, you're. But the whole thing is you're maintaining, kind of from a military strategy standpoint, that strategic high ground. You're always on
Yeah.
top.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I like how you said it, the transition, and I guess I didn't think of that particular word,
Well, that's what you were saying. It's just I can't
but
remember
that's
what word you
exactly
used.
it, right? I don't remember either. But that's exactly it. You're able to control the space so much better because you're able to control your balance and how your balance interplays with another person's balance. And and judo you would kind of expect would be able to do that too, but it just isn't the same. There's more ways to win in judo, and it's also over once that ippon throw
Right.
is met. And so I think that there's still a lot of battling that happens in judo, but there's not the same level of pummeling and closeness. It's more gripping. There's a lot more room to get your hips through and things like that. But wrestling, it's very up close and personal, and space is by and large, it can be a friend or an enemy depending on which side of that coin you're on. And so just wrestling too, to me is such a powerful base to have because you look at what is being done in the UFC. It's basically arena fighting, right? Which was done back in Roman times,
Yeah.
and even before that, with Greeks and any other
The
early
Egyptians,
civilizations.
yeah, all
Yeah,
of
all
them.
those guys. And there's a great book for anybody out there that still reads books. It's called Game of the Gods. It was written by a Black Belt Press, probably, I don't know, probably 5, 10 years ago, something like that. And it basically talks about how the Greeks were the first ones to have mixed martial arts. It talks about pancration. It talks about the Olympic wrestling. It's a really good book. It's by Jim Arvanitis, I think is his name.
Oh, Arvin, yeah, I've heard of him. He's
But
a pancration guy.
it's a really good book. And there was this as far as techniques and that it's not as I'll be honest, it leaves a little something wanting. But as far as like an actual book of historical knowledge and philosophical kind of stuff, it's really good. And if you look at what we're doing in MMA and you look at what's being done back then, I mean, it's not that much different. Like it's mostly the clothes and the rules a little bit have changed, but other than that, it's still, how do you crank on? So we use now are those very same techniques that are thousands of years old, but it's all based on wrestling. And when there's a pin involved, it just really changes things.
Before the audio cut out, you were talking about this book, Game of the Gods. You said it was good. Pancration, kind of really documenting the history of arena fighting. And it's funny, right? It's like just a perpetual human endeavor, it seems like. It's not like it's ever going to go away.
Yeah, not very likely. But yeah, it's a really good book if anybody's into like that historical kind of where did wrestling come from, where did MMA come from. I highly recommend it. It's got some really good information of it in it.
Well, I always remember, because I know one of the points you were talking about is that that a lot of these guys, these holds go all the way back, and one of the things Billy used to always tell me is like that there's nothing new in wrestling. It's like, the twister is the wrestling guillotine. You know what I mean? Like people just keep coming up with new names and applications and different maybe setups and entries, but a lot of these holds go back forever. And the thing that's great about you and your knowledge base, from my perspective anyway, is that, so you really are very open-minded. You try all these things, but you actually got to train with Billy a number of times because we had that gym together when I was bringing Billy out all the time. But you had your own kind of aha moment with catch wrestling, and in particular, the double wrist lock. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, I love the double wrist lock. To jiu-jitsu guys, that means Kimura. But before it was the Kimura, he called it the double wrist lock. or Ude Garame, which is basically like twisted arm. And it's one of my favorite submissions. People think of it as kind of a big guy submission sometimes, but in reality, it's very technical. And if you get the grip right, it allows you to control your opponent in transition to a lot of different areas. And so anybody that's going to come to the seminar, the April 13 and 14 seminar, you will definitely be getting a lot of double wrist lock techniques from every position, standing, top, bottom. It's everywhere. And I really fell in love with it, especially when I started seeing how Billy was applying it. He did it a little bit differently than how a lot of the jiu-jitsu guys were doing it. And I feel in most respects, his way is superior, just to be able to attack that shoulder. And so, yeah, I think I started to like it, but it's really been probably the last, I don't know, 5-6 years that I've really just started to, or that I really have made that one of my go-to moves that I'm constantly always studying. The other day I was actually talking with a buddy of mine. He's my leg lock coach, Jorge Sagastume. And I sent him a video from actually trained with Amir Alam. Amir is a 10th planet jiu-jitsu black belt here in Salt Lake. He's a good friend. And I sent him a move that Amir was showing us, and he's like, oh, there's just so many techniques. And I'm like, and I kind of had an epiphany at that moment too. And I was like, you know, there's a lot of techniques. And if you get stuck in just focusing on only the techniques, you'll end up being completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Because there's just, for every one person, there's probably like 100 different techniques that will work, or, and conversely, that won't work. And so out of every grappling school, you'll have, you know, all sorts of different ways to do a move and those different ways to look at the problem. But if you think of it as, instead of just chasing the techniques, if you think of it as like phone numbers, like the number, there's only 10 numbers on your phone, right? 0 through 9, 10 numbers. But out of those 10 numbers, you can make infinite possibilities. And as long as you understand the destination, then you can start to program the numbers how you need to get to that place for you. And for example, if you're a good wrestler and you have good takedowns, you're probably going to really transition into the top game very quickly. And so I would say if you're looking to be successful, learn the top game the best you can, learn passing. Obviously you still want to learn the guard, but you need to have a home base if you're transitioning from wrestling to jiu-jitsu. And so make the takedown to the top game your home base. And then as you go, continue to develop the guard and build on that. Now, you might find that you're really good on your back and as a wrestler, and you decide, okay, I'm not going to wrestle as much. I'm going to do more like Eddie Bravo did this, right? Like he wasn't as strong of a wrestler with takedowns and top game, more of takedowns. He was pretty good on top, but he said, well, I'm going to play on the mat wrestling more, which is the top game, the bottom game. And so he became really good guard guy and really, you know, good on top. So it just depends on where you feel that kind of talent or gravitation. And so you definitely don't want to discount anything, but if you're looking to get better faster, you should really start with where your base ability lies, you know? And that's just kind of me talking from a wrestler's perspective, transitioning to jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu guys are going to have a lot harder time transitioning to wrestling, for the most part, than a wrestler to jiu-jitsu, I think. The top game, I think, for jiu-jitsu really transitions well to the mat wrestling if you're willing to learn a few things. And I think even the bottom game, you can have some merit for like a folk style wrestling. But you don't really see it coming backwards that way as much. It's, mostly because the opportunities to wrestle are primarily in the scholastic system, and so once you're out of high school, there's really not a lot of opportunities to do that unless you're lucky enough to have like an intramural program or some kind of club at your local college or university. Then you're kind of stuck with just jujitsu and whatever the jujitsu guy or instructor teaches you. So,
Well, you know, it's interesting. You were just ta this is a little bit off the topic, but you'd mentioned that with Amir, you were talking about over leg lock techniques or something, and then of course talking to you about this, it clicked in my brain. You know this as well as anybody because you've been around the scene forever, like me, and you've seen kind of the evolution and how different things get trendy and hot and then fade away. Well, you know, the last couple of years, obviously, it's been leg locks or whatever. But Utah, you were talking about Walt Bayless. Man, Walt Bayless was on the leg lock train like
Yeah,
before anybody.
so this is back. This is yeah. Bayless guys were doing leg locks before leg locks were even a thing, and they were studying Sambo and everything else. It's funny because Justin Ellison was actually one of the Walt Bayless guys out here, and very successful at MMA. He won a world title in Pancration. Really good jiu-jitsu. But he was a big time leg lock guy, and he had a series of leg lock VHS tapes. And so John Danaher was out here back in January, and there was so he came and did a seminar, and then there was a grappling tournament the next day, and I guess he went and watched that. And Justin Ellison was at that same tournament watching as well. And John Danaher comes up to Justin Ellison and says, "Oh, you're Justin Ellison." He's like, I love your tapes. I used to watch those, and that's where I got a bunch of my leg lock stuff." And
That's nice.
so that was a really big thing for Ellison to be able to, hear that from a guy that is having so much success with his students in the leg lock game. But goes back to kind of the guys that are super tough, but you don't
You don't
hear
know who they
about.
are.
And that's the thing, like in today's world, like it's where do you get the best stuff from? Is it really from the guys that are out there just blowing smoke, or is it people that are really have paid their dues and put time in it? And but anyway, that leg locks, it used to be 1 in 100 people would do them, and that's assuming you had 100 people doing any kind of grappling, little, any kind of submission grappling. And now it's kind of really become popular in the last, I don't know, say maybe 4 or 5 years at the most. Just because people like because of the Danaher guys are having success with them. But everything goes in cycles. And so, leg locks, they're really good. And I think people are excited about them right now because if you'll spend, let's say, it goes back to kind of what I was talking about before, where it's difficult to fight from the bottom. The guard is always going to be at a disadvantage because you're fighting against gravity and you're fighting against position and other factors. But with a leg locks, you can still be in a disadvantaged position, and you're attacking the legs and isolating the legs, which if you look at how the body's built, right? If you what's that circle with the perfect man, Da Vinci's
Oh
perfect
yeah,
man,
the
what's that called?
Vitruvian. Yeah, Vitruvian man.
Vitruvian, yeah,
Vitru
that
Vitruvian, VIT.
Vitruvian. Okay,
Yeah.
so the Vitruvian man, if you study that and you look at from a jiu-jitsu or let's just say grappling standpoint, you're trying to attack a limb. If you look at the legs are in the shape of a V and the arms are in the shape of a T. So the part of the concept of having a good leg lock attack is controlling the inside, which basically means I need one of my knees inside of his legs.
Inside the V, yeah.
Inside the V. One can be out, one can be in. I can have both in or both out, or, you know, but if I'm going to be successful with leg lock, I've got to have at least one inside controlling that inside. Well, leg locks are very easy to transition one to the other because that V shape keeps you trapped there. And so you look at the upper body now, it's a T shape. Yeah, to get to the other arm, you have to go all the way across the body to be able to get there.
Well, it's very interesting because for me, as somebody who's been really, you know, into the catch stuff and pushing it and all that kind of thing, I mean, you know, guys like Carl and Billy, they really looked down at the guard. I think maybe the best word is loathe. They really loathed the idea of the guard. And back then, nobody could understand it because it was such a strong strategic position unless you know leg locks. And so now that leg locks are trending, you see everybody kind of really rethinking this whole guard strategy. So in that sense, it's interesting to see the game kind of evolve. And what I'm hoping is, you know, the next thing, because Danaher certainly is really good at, you know, he's got the ear of some influential people and popularizing stuff. I hear him throwing around the idea of the pin, although when he uses the word pinning somebody, it's way different than wrestling. I sure hope that some other stuff gets trendy real soon, like cradles. Like, I mean, cradling, to me... If people aren't using cradles, I just can't understand it. It's such an easy way when the guy's knee is near his head, which is like a lot of these Brazilian guys that don't have a wrestling background, or Nelson's. You don't see Nelson's really leveraged that much, and they should be.
Yeah, not as much. You have to understand neck cranks in order to be able to use those effectively in like the modern grappling competition settings. If you understand neck cranks, cradles all of a sudden are like your best friend.
Yeah.
Case in point, I was looking up matches a while back just for catch wrestling or whatever, and I came across a match of Josh Barnett versus Luis Ojeda, and that match was basically Josh gets a takedown, he does a cradle, and then right out of his cradle he gets a neck crank.
Yep.
And I saw that and I was like, oh, duh, that's been sitting there looking at me the whole time. And I was like, okay, cradles are awesome. So then I'm cradling everybody now. Yeah, I cradle to get out past the knee shield. I cradle to get past, in a side control. Cradle to, you know, just for whatever. People try to roll under for the ashigurumi and just, okay, cradle. And then takes it away. It kind of goes back to what I was saying with the telephone numbers. You have to know the number and able to make it work. Otherwise, it's just kind of a bunch of numbers, and you're just like, what do I do with this?
Yeah.
And so it takes some exposure sometimes. But I think the leg locks are effective or have caught on a lot more because they are honestly easier than becoming a good guard player. You are able to take advantage of a guy that's, you know, there's a lot of standing guard passes, which in my mind, I'm like, well, just don't stand up. And then he can't leg lock you from, I'm like, that's easy to stop. Like, don't just stand there in front of him. Oh, he leg locked me. Well, cause you were standing there like an idiot. I think it's taken on because it's effective. It finishes matches. It's exciting because you see finishes, but really, it's kind of tricky. It's like in folk style wrestling, you don't see a lot of leg riders because it's more difficult to learn and it's sometimes a little bit risky. Sometimes you get exposed on your back, and so leg locks is very much the same way. But the guys that do it, it's very effective for them, and Like I say, I feel like it's easier to learn leg lock, good leg lock game than it is to learn like a really good traditional guard game, because it's just you're fighting, you're not fighting weight as much, and you're not fighting positions as much. You're more mobile, and some other things start to come into play for you. And that's where I really like the idea of catch wrestling, because you can take and go against some of the current thinking and use it in your grappling. And so back in the beginning, I said that I was more of a grappler. I honestly don't care what style it is, as long as it wins a match for me. It could be Aikido for all I care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I say that in all seriousness. Like, so we were doing some stuff here at my home gym with one of my black belts, Kofi Adzito. And Kofi's a really tough kid. He's not a kid anymore, but
Fastest guy I've ever.
Big, strong guy.
Oh, and fast.
African, you know, he's African from Africa. He's not super tall, but he's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, big, explosive. Like, we'll go out and do stone lifting. And there's this group called Utah Stones of Strength on Facebook. And so they have these different stone lifting challenges. We drove out to the Golden Spike out in, where was it? Anyway, out up past Ogden and Tremont and those places. And we went out to this place called the Chinese Arch. And there's this 240-pound stone out there. And the goal is you pick it up and you carry it around this trail 150 feet. And that's the, you complete the challenge, right? So we all try it. We had a couple of my other guys there. Noah Jenkins was there. Matt Brown was there. And so Kofi was there. Wade Alexander was there. So I think it was just the five of us, five or six of us. And so we're all taking turns. So, and these are all big guys. So these are my teammates, right? And everybody laughs because they're like, dude, don't you hang out with anybody that's lighter than 220? And I'm like, there's a couple, but not as often, right? Like, these are all big guys. And you probably think we were football players, really, if we were walking
dude,
in.
Dude, no, trust me. Listen, I remember when I was at that gym, I was like 190 pounds. I'm like, my God, what in the hell am I thinking here?
Anyway, massive dudes, you know, weightlifting strong, good, solid wrestling. So we're struggling away on this 240-pound stone. Matt and Noah and Wade were kind of struggling with it. Matt and Wade probably got it like halfway and then dropped it and then had to pick it up and then finished. I picked it up and carried it like 20 feet and then dropped it. And then I got pissed off and picked it up and carried it the rest of the 150 feet. I just wish that I had done that to begin with. Like, I finally get done. And then Kofi picks up this 240 pound stone, puts it on his shoulder, slides it onto his trap, onto his back. And he basically sprints with this thing. I was pretty fast. Like, I got 130 feet in like a minute and a half, almost 2 minutes, that time frame. Kofi does it in 30 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
Without dropping.
No. And then he's a stud, dude.
And then he's like, and then he did it three more times. Like, he does it, and then we take a turn, and then he just grabs it again and goes again. So that's how strong this guy is. So, reason why I'm sharing this story, Aikido. So we're here training and doing takedowns, because we like to do takedowns to submission, just like you would in a competition. And so I get a hold of his hand. I just put him in an Aikido lock. You know, the cheesy one that they teach the police to?
Yeah, yeah.
I just fold the wrist?
Yeah.
I have no idea how it worked, but I just grab it. I'm like, I'm just going to give it a try just to bug him. So I fold his wrist. He falls down. I jump on top of him and just go straight into an armbar.
Yeah.
Right? Like textbook Aikido. And I'm like, well, I don't care. It could come from Aikido. It could come from Judo. It could come from whatever. As long as it works, that's what I'm into. So anyway, I think that, you know, techniques, they're important as long as they can help you get to where you need to go. And really that depends on, where do you want to go? Like, do you want to be a grappler? Do you want to be a jiu-jitsu guy? Do you want to be, MMA? Like, what's your end goal? So that's really where, you know, like, it just kind of depends on that. So long way around to get back to to back on point. But
no, but listen, you know what you're bringing up is totally relevant because, well, a couple things. One, yes, Kofi's a stud. I remember before I hung up my boots in the gym, I wrestled Kofi, and man, that guy, he was the only guy my size in the gym back then, and yet like 10 times stronger than anybody and faster. Man, that guy, oh, yeah. You blink and he'd have your legs. It was like, geez, man, that guy's. And so speaking of, before we leave Kofi, I do want to say, like, any promoters out there, you want to book this guy. He looks like the Black Panther. I mean, he's ripped and cut and he's just a stud. He's a professional. And how long has he been training under you? Like 10 years now or something.
Yeah. 10 years now. We just gave him awarded him his black belt.
Nice.
This last summer. So yeah, he's a really great talent. So,
well, and then to what you're saying about the wrist lock, you know, that's another move in my opinion. I see some people doing it and everybody is calling them dirty when they're doing these like wrist, like you'd say, folding the wrist and kinking the wrist and stuff.
Uh-huh.
That shit works. I mean, it really works. Cause Billy showed it to me and I did the same thing. I kind of looked down my nose at it. And then of course, you know, I didn't want to take the bad end of Billy's cane. So I just started doing what he told me. And I was like, okay, yeah, fine. I'll do this dumb wrist lock thing. Cause I thought it was a pro wrestling move.
Yeah.
And what was that young kid that we had that was, you know, he was a high school up at Bountiful. He was a high school champ, that young guy. And I mean, you know, I'm old and he was young and he was taking me down and I stopped that game and I actually pulled that wrist lock on him a couple times. I was like, this is a legit takedown, you know,
yeah.
the wrist locks.
Like, you might not be able to go to the well more than once, but
yeah.
You know, if it wins you that one match.
Yeah, it's like that arm bar, arm drag thing where you hyperextend it. You might get that once on a guy.
You maybe get it on one guy, but yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, high percentage is best, but, you know, sometimes you got to explore and experiment with things.
Okay, so you're coming down here in April, which I'm really excited about because you and I have done things before together, but never here in Colorado. It's going to be at Genesis Training Center. So you guys could Google, you know, find that on Facebook or whatever. It's the Genesis Training Center. It's going to be you on Saturday and then Joel and me. We'll probably do a little on Saturday and a little bit on Sunday. You're going to be heading back to Utah. That's going to be on April 13th and 14th. So guys, send me a message, find me whatever, training at Scientific Wrestling if you want to get on the list. It's going to be a hell of a 2-day camp. Now, enough of all this BS, Brandon, okay? We've been beating around the bush, and now I need you to share the real secrets, the real secrets to success, because we could talk technique. We could talk conditioning because you have your whole body weight conditioning program. I mean, all this stuff. Okay. But let's get past that. Okay. For a second, because the things that ended up tapping me out, and I think tap out a lot of guys, you have somehow mastered. And there are two things that I want you to maybe address.
Okay.
The first is, how the hell do you not get injured? Because I'm always injured. And then the second thing, you have 6 freaking kids and a wife and a job. And you're still on top of the food chain.
Oh,
do you know how mad that makes me at you? You're one of my best friends.
Might be where you were going.
I'm
going
to just get this out in public right now. I love you, Brandon, but that pisses me off. I'm jealous as hell. What the hell? How do you do it? How do you not get injured? I mean, you've been wrestling forever. I'm like crippled and I can't. I mean, it sucks. And then on top of that, you have a full family life, a full career. That's what gets everybody. Yeah. Nobody can do that. Yeah. How do you do that?
Yeah. I have a really good wife.
You do have a really good wife.
She's amazing. She
Bryn is amazing.
She supports me 100%, and I support her 100% in her pursuits too. And I think that's really part of it, is just understanding that, wrestling is a huge part of my life, but or at least as a competitor, you know. But that window is, I mean, I've been able to keep it open a lot longer than even I had hoped to, and I hope to maybe get another few more years out of it. But it's really just been a lifelong dedication at this point. And I think when we were first married, there was I had the opportunity to go to the Olympic Training Center and train Greco-Roman wrestling. And the sales pitch I gave her was like, well, let's just go out there for a year and I'll see what I can do. And she's like, okay. Well, I went to Nationals that year, and this was in 2004. And the top eight qualified for the Olympic trials. And I missed getting into the placing just by, like, I lost the last match before the placing rounds. Mm. And I was catatonic after that match. I was one of the last matches of the day. And I ended up just sitting on the edge of the mat, on the edge of these raised platform mats. I just sat there for like an hour. I was just devastated, you know, because I thought at that point in time, I thought, this is it. My wrestling career is over. You know, we said we're going to be here for a year, and I didn't qualify for Olympic trials. And,
wow.
You know, it's over. This is it. Wrestling's really dead for me. And so I just was kind of in that catatonic state the rest of the weekend, and we still had a day to go before we could, you know, before our flight left. And so it was like the next day we were walking, and this is in Las Vegas. It's like mid-spring, so it was pretty warm. And we're walking through this giant parking lot, and it was really hot outside. It was probably like 90 degrees or so. And I just, like, I don't know, I just kind of mentally had a fit. And, like, I wasn't, like, being loud or anything, but I just said, screw it, I'm going to lay down. I just laid down in the middle of the freaking asphalt.
Oh, no.
In this giant sea of parking lot. And at that point, she's like, yeah, he's got to wrestle. This is messed up. Like, he loves this.
Yeah.
And I think that was, like, one of probably many such kind of events where, you know, she really started to see how much I loved wrestling. And so, yeah, it's been 100% from her ever since. And I've been really fortunate with that. She homeschools our children, and that's what she wants to do. I never said that she had to do that. I'm actually always saying, you know, if you want to send the kids to a school, it's not going to hold it against you. And she's like, no, I want to do this.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And she's awesome. And without that kind of support, I don't think I could have done it. And so really a lot of it goes to how I've chosen to live my life. You know, like it's basically, I got this t-shirt a while ago that says God, Family, Wrestling. And that's basically my three pillars, you know.
Yeah, it's a good order.
My family and my wrestling. And without those, like, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do the things I have. And so I'll credit a lot of the success I've had and the longevity I've had to my faith, you know, clean living. I don't drink or don't smoke. I'm not a partier. I like to eat food. Right? Food's probably my biggest physical vice, but you know, for the most part, it's pretty healthy lifestyle. You know, that, and other than sitting at a desk all day, but and then also just listening to my body more. Like, I used to lift a lot heavier. I used to do heavy squats, heavy deadlifts, heavy bench press. I finally got my bench press to 400 pounds, which took me a long time to get.
Wow.
And then after that, I was like, okay, I don't need to go do that anymore, because I hit the goal. And, you know, I haven't bench pressed in probably like 5 years, 6 years, just because I didn't, you know, at that point I was like, okay, I didn't need to do it anymore. And then, you know, when my body started to break down, like, I've had low back stuff ever since high school, And I was still squatting and deadlifting through that. Looking back on it, if I would have known what I know now, I probably wouldn't have done all the squatting and the deadlifting.
I mean, how long have you been doing grappling? Is it 30 years? It has to be over 30 years, right?
Close to it. I started when I was 15. I'll be 42 the end of March.
Wow. So, like 27 years or something.
Yeah, long time. Long time. And that's like... that's like, you know, actively training and competing and stuff the majority of that time. So
yeah, that's not just showing up to the gym and yeah, but I mean, you're like at the top of the, I mean, that's an impressive feat in itself. So, so what advice then do you have to guys? You know, obviously they could pick your brain at the camp if they're here in Denver or, you know, drivable nearby
from
Nebraska or wherever. But, what, you know, Wyoming or any of those other states, like, how do you balance it though, man? Because like, dude, say I have three kids, six kids,
five actually.
Oh, I thought you had so, six.
No, five.
Five, but two still, of them, but you have twins. Tough. You have twins.
Yeah, we had twins.
So wait. People don't understand. Twins is insane. Twins,
dude,
is like all of a sudden
double.
You have.
It's not doubling kids. It's like 10 times in kids. Like every cry or problem that wakes you up at night, it's not just doubling. It's like some kind of weird, crazy baby force amplifier. Like, like the first couple of years, oh my gosh, I don't know how we survived. And like during that time frame, I came to realize why all the bad things happened on the news. And I was like, you know, I can see why people do stuff. I don't condone it, but I understand why.
It could be hard, dude.
They've just gone crazy, man.
Yeah.
Like, they've gone legit, lost it.
Well, it's like all these dads. You see all these sad dads that do, like, you know, these babies, like, shaken baby syndrome stuff. And that is just awful. I mean, that's just, like, the most tragic thing in the world. But unless you've been a dad and, like, you've been sleep deprived for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then you have something important to do the next day, and then there's this screaming being and you feel bad, but it is like it could be some of the most challenging things to be a parent in the world.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine twins.
Yeah, like they got these guys, what is it, Guantanamo used to be like a hot topic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're sleep deprived, all these noises, and I'm like, that's kid, that's like having a kid, that's easy. Like, these guys aren't being tortured, they're just experiencing parenthood.
I had that same thought. I remember, like, my youngest, my older two slept well, but my youngest didn't sleep at all, man. And my poor wife was so burned out, so I kind of took on that burden of being up at night with him. And, dude, I mean, it, like, sleep deprivation, I literally feel like it almost destroyed me. It was, like, a hard period of my life.
It's a real thing. It is a real thing.
That's amazing.
I kind of joke about the sleep deprivation. It's, I mean, it is a real thing, but... I mean, if you're a terrorist, that's like the least. Of the
right. Of course, of course.
But as far as longevity, I think one of the things that I've always tried to do is continue to build my knowledge base, and also try to be adaptable. And so, like, I started to understand, like, okay, if my back's hurting, then I probably should find different exercises that I can do. That are going to allow me to still be explosive and powerful, but I need to do something different than just continually to load it. You know what I mean? And so just kind of continuing to adapt my training over time. And then also the way that I look at training, I try to split it up. Cause I don't grapple every day. I wish I could from like a mental standpoint, but physically I don't know that once you hit a certain age that grappling every day, twice a day is in your long-term best interest.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, when I do get on the mat, like, I like to go hard. I like to spar. I like to do all the stuff that all the young guys do, but I also try to be technical. And people are like, oh, no, you're just a big, strong guy. I'm like, well, actually, I probably have learned all the techniques you have, but I'm stronger
right.
and I do them. Right. But I'm trying to do them the best that I know how. I might not do them perfectly. I might be still developing in some regards, But the ones that I do know, I'm like, no, I'm trying to use technique every bit as much as the next guy. And so, like, it's more than just, I don't know, because I'm the same kind of guy that, like, I would train hard enough that I go into a state of overtraining and start damaging myself. And, you know, I'm like old school where it's like, oh, your hip's hurting today? Oh, quit being a pussy. Just go train.
Yeah.
But also part of me had to come to the realization that it's like, well, you need to listen and understand and find a workaround. And the other side of that is too, is like, you don't need to train as hard as you think you do. Like, and once I finally let go of that, in some cases I was like, oh, so instead of me having to try to jam a square peg through a round hole, if I do this and this, I can still have the result that I need and be successful. And so, like, you know, training like Rocky is cool, but you need to understand when to do it and why to do it, and not just like, okay, I'm going to train this way year round. Like, no, I have training camps, and I'll go hard for, like, you know, 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever it needs to be. And then after that, I'll back off and I'll go back into more of a technique phase and, you know, let the body kind of recover and all of that. And so I think that helps in the longevity too. And then continuing to be serious about strength and conditioning and those kind of things are important too. Like, a lot of guys also just think of strength and conditioning as a way to just be stronger, but really it's a way to keep yourself from getting hurt, you know, keeping your flexibility up, keeping your strength up, being able to do range of motion, all those kind of things are important too. And I'll be the first to admit, like, sometimes I go through phases just like everybody else. Like, there's times where, like, I need to work on something that I probably, missed, but then I finally come around to it and I get it, you know, figured out. But yeah, just trying to keep it to consistency too, is a big thing. Guys oftentimes want to do a big competition or maybe it's even just a local competition, but they think that they're going to go into training camp mode and they go from 0 to 10, and when they should have started and gone from 0 to 1 and then 0 to 2 and then so on and so forth, but they just jump in like, okay, we're going to hard twice a day for the next 8 weeks. And I'm like, bro, you haven't even been doing regular training every other day. How in the heck are you going to just jump into training camp? And a lot of these guys will do that and they'll just break down and they'll stop after the first 2 weeks. Cause in all honesty, that's like, if you're doing that twice a day, you know, every day for 14 days, that's pretty tough. Like, you're, you know, and most of these guys are, you know, adults 30 plus, and your body just will not bounce back the way it did when it was, you know, 20 and younger, you know. And even then, I wouldn't say that that's a good way to do it. So I think for me, like, being consistent, trying to give my body a chance to recuperate after competitions, trying to be more practical with training and how my body needs to respond and planning it out has made a big difference. But, you know, a lot of that came with doing it the wrong way too, coming up as a younger guy. Like, I did it the wrong way a bunch of times too. But I think just trying to be adaptable and being consistent really helped as far as the physical side. And then just always, this has always been a passion for me. And, you know, like, when you're starting out, like, training is a sacrifice, but later on training is fun. Like mm-hmm. I'd rather train than do other things, you know, because that's what I love to do now. And so that's, if you want longevity, you have to come to grips with, well, what's like a sacrifice now will eventually become your favorite thing. But in the beginning, it might not be that way. And so it's just, I don't know. It's hard because you can't, it's like, love for something isn't something that you can just, like, bestow on somebody, you know?
Yeah, you're like a real thinker about these things. I mean, so your book, Champions Find a Way, it's still available, right? Like, on Amazon or what?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, because you talk about a lot of this stuff. And, you know, before doing this podcast, we were talking a little bit about the time you were on, I used to have an AM talk show, And you were on that in Utah. And what was the name of the guy that you came on with?
Joey Johnson.
Yeah, you were doing a lot of like head work too, like how to mentally get an edge.
So, like that's, you know, there's so much that goes into that, but he was I ran into him out in Colorado, and he really helped me basically get to the next level in Greco-Roman wrestling, just because of the mental skills I don't want to say mental toughness because it doesn't create the right.
But they're like mental strategies.
It's mental performance, right? Like performance. It's specifically to deal with anxiety or stress or pressure or strategy or whatever. Like it's really hard because all those things are related, but they're not, right? Because that's all things you do inside your own head.
Yeah.
And people are really afraid of getting in their own head and dealing with stuff. And until you're ready to do that, you're not going to be as good as you could be. I've watched guys, you know, friends, you know, even that I saw that would not deal with some of the things inside their head of how to deal with performance anxiety or strategy and things like that. It's like, dude, you're the most technical guy in the world, or you're the strongest guy, but you know what? You're letting yourself get beat mentally. And that's, I mean, we all have that, you know.
I'll just be candid. That's my biggest problem. I used to be such a killer in the gym. Like I would wrestle with anybody, anytime. I didn't care because I usually had wind and I usually had a couple tricks up my sleeve that nobody knew. Yeah. But man, the second I would get out at a tournament, I couldn't handle the headspace, man. It just started creeping on me.
Yeah, it does that for a lot of people. There was I remember back. Long time ago, I was at a wrestling camp being part of the coaching staff, and there was this one particular kid, and he was probably like a junior age. I think he had one more year to go, but they had like at the end of the camp, they had like a dual meet format, and everybody would wrestle. And so this kid, he was on fire, like he was pinning everybody. And he was like kind of a middle of the roader during with his high school record, you know?
Yeah.
But at this camp, he was having fun. He was being improvising, being creative, and just going out and pinning people that were like legit state champions, you know?
Yeah.
And then they created this quote unquote final duel. And then all of a sudden that same kid just fell apart because of the pressure. And it was really, it was really something that stuck with me because I'm like, I don't want to be like that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and this is me. I'd already done my high school experience. I'm in, you know, I can't remember if I was in college or if I was at the Olympic Center. Anyway, this many years, it all starts to meld together. But that one experience stuck out to me. And I was like, you know what? I don't want me or my athletes to have to go through that.
That mental torment.
That just mental dump. And so I've tried to do everything within my power as an athlete and as a coach to try to deal with those things, you know. And like I say, you're never going to be 100% fully free of those things, because the bigger the stakes get, the more opportunity for performance anxiety and things like that to get in. But there's ways to deal with them. There's ways to overcome those kind of things and build strategies for your mind, but also for your you know, match strategy. Like a lot of guys just go out there and they're like really technical or you know, really physical, but they can't put a match together.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how it looks from start to finish, you know? And that's a learned skill. How does this match need to play out? Like what happens at minute one? What happens at minute two? What happens at minute five? You know, like if you don't have those things figured out and kind of developed on paper, how are you going to do that in the match? Like you can't just, show up and say, I'm going to go wherever he goes. I'm like, okay, great. Go where, if you
Good
go
luck.
Where I go, you will be unconscious.
Yeah,
that is exactly. Cause that's where I'm going to put you. I'm going to put you unconscious. That's where I want you to go.
Yeah. You have to have a plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I hate to cut you off, but I only want to give away a glass of milk. I don't want to give away the whole cow.
No, we won't.
Because, literally, guys, if you're listening to this, Brandon, I mean, he's a friend, but I'm just telling you because I've known him for so long. This guy is like, he's so deep on every aspect of the game, and his resume is a testament. I mean, I'm just telling you, because he won't tell you. He's a humble guy. So if you want to book Brandon, you can go over to the pinandsubmit.com, pinandsubmit.com. Just fill out the form. Tell us where your gym is, what your budget, and we'll figure it out. And then also, if you're anywhere near Colorado, drivable a couple hours, you're going to want to come to this camp. It's going to be amazing. It's you, Joel. You even wrestled Joel at one time. Me.
Yes.
So.
Finish.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the only other thing I wanted real quick say, and then we could talk about you and Joel, and I'm sure the campers will get an earful. You know, we were talking about what kind of a secret hotbed Salt Lake is for grappling and wrestling and MMA. I mean, my wife went to high school with Cale Sanderson, for Pete's sake. You know, I mean, it's such a crazy state that way, like how wrestling is like everywhere. Well, we're talking about conditioning, and it kind of popped in my head. I've been doing, like, when I had to finally quit because of all the nerve damage and, you know, I was losing feeling in my arm and all this other stuff, when I finally hung it up, I didn't realize how much arthritis I had because, you know, the best thing for arthritis is movement.
Yep, and keep moving.
Yeah, like, really, like, don't do pills. Just, you got to just move. So I kind of stopped moving. And, man, it was debilitating. I remember a couple days I was so bad. Especially with kind of the weather changes in Utah, I would be in the shower, like turned up on high, like just like kind of crying, to be honest. It was so painful. Yeah. And, you know, one thing I would, if I had it all to do again, it was actually Josh Berkman. I started going to Bikram yoga, you know, which is like a 90-minute hot yoga practice. And I really, if anybody listening hasn't tried it, you got to try this stuff. It's amazing. So I'm going into yoga and Josh Berkman's there, and I'd never met him before, but you know, it's like, you know, people who know the same people or whatever. So I'm like, oh, hey Josh, what's up? And we got to talking. He's like, you know what, man, this is the greatest thing because first of all, I do this yoga and it keeps me loose and you know, it's a great injury prevention thing, but he goes, you know, it's great for my guys because once they start doing the hot yoga, having them doing cutting weight is like no problem. Like something that was really difficult and challenging, you've totally inoculated to them by doing this hot yoga every day, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's low impact.
100%.
That's a great thing about it. I remember, you know, putting on the sweatsuits and the plastics and jumping in the sauna and doing calisthenics and, you know, jogging and I mean, like it was way, way heavy impact. And so not only are you dehydrating yourself like the day before your tournament, you're banging yourself up. And
yeah.
So to do something like that, it'd definitely be a good thing. I haven't quite reached the Bikram level. I'm doing some more yoga stretches now and it's actually really helpful, but yeah, that Bikram stuff, I don't know, man. I'll have to try it out sometime.
Yeah, it's challenging. I don't do the Bikram anymore just because 90 minutes a day is too much out of my day. I can't afford that much time.
Sure.
But I found there's another program called Core Power Yoga, and it's an hour. It's still hotter than hell. But, you know, one thing before we leave that subject is that because I was testing it. Like, anytime I do something or I'm going to, you know, have any of my guys do it or I make a recommendation, I try to test it and get at least some basic, that's like the statistician in me. And I'll tell you, on average, after every Bikram, I would lose 6 pounds of water weight.
Oh, wow.
6 pounds. And that was just average. Crazy. I wasn't even working hard. It was just being in that hot room, going through those stretches and the 6 pounds in 90 minutes. So something to think about.
That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. So you wanted to tell a story about Joel.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, let me throw one thing out for longevity. It's better to do 20 or 30 minutes of something than it is 0 minutes of nothing.
Truth.
And that's where a lot of guys miss. And they have to try to make up for it by training longer later. But in reality, if you'll just be consistent, 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there. Anyway, that's one of the secrets.
But, excellent advice.
But yeah, so Joel and I... He actually was part of the World Class Athlete program, I believe, for a little while. He was wrestling, or at least when he was in the Air Force, he was doing a little bit of wrestling and things like that. And then I knew his coach, Rich Estrella. He was the Air Force wrestling team coach. And they, so when I was at the Olympic Center, we had Air Force, Marine, and Army. So Air Force and Army had bases there, and so they had a regular stable of guys there training. Anyway, I knew Rich, and so in 2013, for the grappling world team trials, I went down to Las Vegas, and it just so happened that Joel came to Las Vegas to also compete for the trials, and so we met up and locked horns at the 2013 world team trials, and that was a lot of fun. But anyway, so after that match, he was a really cool guy. We actually had best 2 out of 3, which was kind of fun because that was
Oh,
more
cool.
like that was so like
Old
that was more
school.
like yeah. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, you guys
Joel
come
is
up
a
on the
great guy. Joel is
yeah.
so funny because, anybody who sees him, I mean, the guy is like, he looks like a pro wrestler.
Oh yeah,
Like,
he definitely looks the part.
he looks like a better looking version of Brock Lesnar or something. Like, he's real tall. He's got that army
Yeah.
haircut, the Air Force
Yeah,
haircut.
big, strong, chiseled guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I mean, Kenny, Kenny as well. Kenny and I laugh at this because he's like, he would make it so he would go so big at pro wrestling just because he has that look, but he hates pro
His look,
wrestling.
yeah.
Yeah, he hates it though.
That's too funny.
So,
Yeah, well, and Kenny was actually a teammate when I was on the Sunkissed Kids Greco team. He was a Utah, or sorry, Arizona State guy. And Arizona State is one of the hubs for Sunkissed Kids. So
yeah.
yeah, I knew both of those guys back through Greco before I ever knew them through. Well, I guess I knew Joel through grappling, but Kenny through wrestling.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny how that all interconnects that way. So, I won't keep you because we're kind of coming up on the end of it here. Guys, check out the blog. It's RuizCombatGrappling.com. That's right, Brandon?
Yes.
So RuizCombatGrappling.com. He's got like a blog. You've been doing it for years, so he's got a ton of articles on there. Champions Find a Way is a really it really is a great book. You can get that on Amazon. Just Google Brandon's name, and then check out Pin and Submit if you want to bring them out to your gym or dojo. Pinandsubmit.com. This is a, I mean, you're a four-time All-American.
So Greco and freestyle, I was at the junior level. I was four time for freestyle and Greco, and then for adult level, I was four time Greco,
Wow.
and then a Pan American silver medalist.
When did you get your third degree from Hegan?
Just last summer. I was supposed to have been awarded it sooner from the time frame, but it never works out like that. So
Yeah.
I officially got awarded last summer.
Wow.
So
Awesome.
yeah, because once you get your black belt, it's all just, hey, here's proof of you being old. So
Right.
it's like, oh, hey, 3 years here, you get a stripe. Oh, 5 years, you get a stripe. It's just, anyway, it's still exciting, but kind of not, because you're like, dang it, I'm old.
Yeah, that's not going to change. It's only going to get worse from here on out. But
Right.
the upside is being old, you know a hell of a lot, and there's a lot of people that
Yeah.
can benefit from that have maybe, similar aspirations as you did when you were a young man.
Technically, I can say you must call me professor now, but that's really not my style. But I always laugh whenever. So I kind of like to tease and poke fun at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu sometimes, but I am very serious when it comes to the ranking and the respect to the gi. Like if, whenever I wear the gi and I take it off, I fold it up really nice and neat
Sure.
and all that stuff. And it drives me absolutely bonkers when I hear people that are not even a first degree black belt. Okay, so first degree means you have a stripe on your black belt. if you're a black belt, you're just a black belt. You're not a first degree until you get a stripe.
Okay.
But and people calling these guys professor, and I'm like, what in the heck are you doing? Professor is an actual earned rank. It's an actual earned title, and it doesn't come until your third degree.
Oh, interesting.
So third degree and fourth degree, you're professor, and I believe it's at fifth degree when they start calling, maybe it's sixth degree. Master is somewhere after that. But it drives me nuts when I hear people in jiu-jitsu letting people call them professor or master or whatever, and they're not anywhere near that level. I'm like, well, you wanted to follow this little dogma of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, then follow
better,
it.
You better follow it, though, 100%. And then, like, anyway, like a while ago, I had to go back and I was looking at everybody's stripes on their belts. I'm like, this isn't how it's supposed to be. Because, like, a lot of guys will just get a big swipe of tape on their black belt. And I'm like, that's not regulation. So I went back and looked up. It's like a really specific centimeter stripe, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I went back and put all my stripes on so they look like they're supposed to look. Anyway, I'm really picky about that for whatever weird reason, but
well, I'll tell you, man, every time I talk to you, I learned something new. I don't really follow jiu-jitsu. I just don't know that kind of stuff, but you know, being around it enough, but that's the first time I ever heard that. I had no idea. I hear some people calling people professor this and that, and I didn't know what that even meant, really.
Yeah, unless you're third degree, please just don't do it.
a bit of a faux pas.
Right.
No, good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. Well, Brandon, I really appreciate all the time. I mean, as ever, you're just amazing, and really excited to have you out here in Colorado. And I know that you've got a crew of guys that you know out here anyway, right? You spend time at the Olympic Training Center down in Colorado Springs, but then also you did a lot of work with Sheldon Mars guys. I've never met Sheldon, but I know he's kind of a local, old school legend guy here.
Yeah, he was a judoka down at the OTC back way back before I was ever there, and he went to Pancration World Championships with Ken Shamrock and. Mm. Keith Hackney and a number of these other guys way back in the day, back when they were trying to get pancration in as a potential Olympic sport. And so he's done a lot for grappling in Colorado. He was really my first real grappling coach, and we've gone all over the world together competing at the world championships. He was, I want to say, 10-time U.S. grappling team coach. He was the coach all but one of the times that I was on the team. And
wow.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun together, and so a lot of good memories out there in Colorado.
Awesome. Well, I am really excited to get you out here and hang out and get you on the mats out here and have people benefit from your years of expertise. So, I really appreciate you taking the time, Brandon.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on. I had a great time, so looking forward to April.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right, guys, stay tuned. Next week, we'll have more fun. Meanwhile, go check out Brandon Ruiz, combatgrappling.com. Also, go to pinandsubmit.com. You can scroll through there, find Brandon, fill out the form, bring him out to your gym. And if you're anywhere nearby or it's easy for you to come out, you got to come out to the seminar at Genesis Training Center. That's going to be April 13th and 14th. Saturday, it starts at noon. We go till 5, then Sunday, 9:30 to 3. You could just email me or, you know, Facebook me or whatever if you need registration information on that. Again, thanks a ton, Brandon.
Thank you, Jake.
Okay.